Imagine, a podcast series by Imagine Theatre.
Hello again, I'm Martin Ballard and welcome to episode 60 of Just Imagine and the latest in an occasional series looking at the popular pantomime titles. This time, it's Dick Whittington.
For more information, go to their website at www.imaginetheatre.co.uk.
Now, if you missed any of the previous episodes, don't forget you can still listen to them. We've had some fabulous guests so far, from the Imagine Theatre headquarters team to performers and backstage members at the various Imagine shows. We've talked about how pantomime is produced, its history and its future. And there are many more episodes to come as well from one of the UK's biggest producers of pantomime and children's theatre. In the last episode, I spoke to the musical director, orchestrator, vocal coach and composer Dan Jarvis about the role of music and the musical director in panto. And this time I've been joined by Imagine's artistic director, Eric Potts, and head of Department for Media and Performance at Staffordshire University, freelance director, Dr. Robert Marsden, for this, the next in our occasional series looking at the most popular pantomime titles. This time, we're turning our attention to Dick Whittington. So, Eric, first of all, welcome.
Hi, Martin. Lovely to be back with you.
And welcome, Rob.
Hi, Martin. Great to be here.
Now, Eric, this one is an interesting one because we've talked in the past about pantomimes being driven by fairy tales, whether it be the Grimm's Brothers, the Arabian Nights or whatever. But Dick Whittington is well and truly rooted in English folklore, isn't it?
It is. It is rumoured to be the only panto title that is based loosely on a real person who actually existed. It's one of my favourite panto titles because it has great adventure, it's got great scope for comedy. And I just love the fact that actually the title character did exist, unlike, we believe, Aladdin or Cinderella or anyone else. It's really got a great tale. And also I quite like the fact that Disney haven't got their hands on it yet. So we can really exploit it with panto magic.
And Rob, the similarity, I guess, is that this is a young man suffering in poverty, who makes good, triumph over adversity, if you like.
Absolutely. And that's what makes it a real staple of pantomimes in the UK. We love that, don't we? We love that adventure, that overcoming adversity, overcoming evil or overcoming a problem and so on and so forth. And really interestingly, the actual Richard Whittington came from a wealthy background and was actually, so it was the opposite in many ways, but was Lord Mayor of London several times. And there were lots of similarities there. But yeah, that sense of making good and being recognised by society for doing good stuff, that's in the pantomime, but it's also in Richard Whittington's real story as well. And to this day, we've got the Mercer's Company that is still through the company that Richard Whittington set up in the kind of the 1400s, is still doing charitable work to this very day. And as Eric said, it's based on a real story. I've only done it three times, actually, because it's not always done. But when I have done it, there's great scope, as Eric was saying, that Disney hasn't got its hands on it. So there are fewer expectations from the audience there, and you can play around with it a lot.
Eric, was there any evidence, as far as you know, or Rob, for that matter, that the original Richard Whittington, who became Lord Mayor of London, ever had a cat?
Well, I think there are conflicting reports, yeah. Aren't there, Rob? There are some reports that say there's absolutely no record of a cat. But I've heard other stories that said, no, actually, he was found with a cat skeleton. And, so we it could go either way. But I'm going to plump for yes, Tommy the cat definitely existed.
I'll go no then. Go on, Eric. I'll go.
Playing the devil's advocate.
Yeah. But there's lots of statues with the cat there as well, as we know. The skeleton story is interesting. But also as well, we're after when the original Dick Whittington, Richard Whittington was alive. We were coming off the back of the plague, weren't we? And so people did have cats to rid of rats in London. So he may well have done.
It's perfectly plausible, isn't it? And yeah. Also, I think it's a fascinating. I don't want to preempt any of your further questions, Martin, but it's a fascinating story that the jeopardy in the pantomime version of Dick Whittington does come from King or Queen Rat and her army of rats that were taking over the streets of London at the time. That's the Abenaza, or the ugly sisters of this particular tale. They are the baddies, are the rats under the the control of Queen Rat or King Rat.
London, obviously, to this day, is very much the setting of Dick Whittington. You know, the themes of Highgate Hill and the sound of Bow Bells and something are a staple element of the Dick Whittington panto, aren't they?
Yeah, very much so. All those factors are in, yeah.
But having said that, I've, over the years, penned a Dick Whittington from Stoke who went sailing down the canal rather than off on the Thames, and similarly one in Glasgow who set off on his adventures doing the water down the Clyde. So I mean, it's because I think we go back, we have mentioned this about the fact Disney haven't hugely popularized this tale as it has done with so many other fairy tales and pantomime subjects. We can do what we like with it and we can localize it, but the original tale, very much based in London, Highgate Hill and Fitzwarren Shop down in the East End, we believe, beside the docks and the old sailing ships of yore.
And I think it was really interesting that you know, in 2020, during the global pandemic, that the National Theatre chose to do Dick Whittington for its pantomime Christmas, and coming off the back of the Lyric Hammersmith version, wasn't it? But very much around that unity of London, that sense of community, a town, a city coming together against rats. But in 2020, it was obviously an invisible enemy as well. So I think, that sense of a community, in many cases it's London, but a community coming together.
Dick Whittington may well have instigated the very first example of the Blitz spirit.
Dick Whittington is one of those titles which has endured time. We've talked about some that have come and new ones that have arrived. I think Dick Whittington was one of the earliest, wasn't it? First in 1814, stage with Joseph Grimaldi, no less, as Dame Cicely Suett, the cook. Why is it so enduring? What is so perfect about this? And why is it your favourite, Eric?
I think, as Robert has mentioned, it's that we all love the underdog. We all love the sense of, it's the rags to riches tale, isn't it? And in the panto version, perhaps not strictly accurate, it is this poor boy who has walked all the way from his birthplace in Gloucestershire to London seeking fame and fortune. And we all desperately want him to do well. And as part of that journey to his riches, he is undermined by the baddie. So it really tugs on the emotions of audience members of all ages, because it's something that we all experience. It's something we all want, you know, that hope, that triumph over adversity. And also, from the point of view of it being my favourite subject, is it can be really funny. It can be so much scope for comedy, as well as all the narrative journey that is made through the plot. So I think it's got a bit of everything, and it's a really good adventure. You know, they set sailing, they end up on the coast of Morocco because Queen Rat, King Rat, causes this huge storm that sinks the alderman's ship. It's got a bit of everything. I love it.
And Rob, it's evolved over time, of course it has. I don't think the fairy first came in until the late 1800s. And you mentioned, or Eric mentioned, travelling to Morocco. It has adapted and evolved over time, hasn't it?
That's right. And, the Moroccan tale is about going somewhere else, isn't it? And having that impact somewhere else. So I've known versions of Dick Whittington where they haven't gone to Morocco, they've gone to Cloudland or somewhere else. But the idea that the cat can have a real impact somewhere else outside of their own community. And what I love about Dick Whittington as well, obviously there's that spectacle, there's often a huge shipwreck, isn't there? There's opportunities for UV scenes underwater or other effects and magical effects. But I get really excited by the story and I wish I could direct it more because of all of those ingredients. And I think that joy of, and people, he's wronged by humans, isn't he? He's believed to often in many of the stories that he's stolen the alderman's riches and so on and ends up in his bundle. And it's humbling for the characters at the end. They realise that they've done wrong. They haven't believed him when he was telling the truth. But he stuck to his guns and he did what was right. And he makes good, and there's apology at the end. So the moral's really strong as well. And I think, as Eric said, the scope for the writer in here, because of the fewer expectations of the story for audiences, there's much more scope, as we know, with the Lyric Hammersmith and National Theatre version, but also, as you know, it was a CBeebies, wasn't it, version last year. And again, it had a very contemporary feel, very much rooted in London, but contemporary feel as well. So the scope to play and explore. I know you can argue you do that with so many other pantomime titles, but because of the expectations, there is that scope for adaptation, and writers such as Eric and others have really embraced that.
Now, whenever we discuss any of the titles, we always look at some of the unique elements that feature in a particular title. We've touched upon some of them already, Eric, haven't we? Tommy the Cat, for instance, and the ship. Just talk us through some of the unique elements that make Dick Whittington different to other pantos.
Yeah, well, from the narrative point of view, as we've said before, it is the only story that is based allegedly on a real character. There is that before we even take the front cloth out. With regards to the actual presentation of the story, there are so many options. We have, as you say, now incorporated the fairy Bow Bells into the story, and she can take Dick into his dream, where he dreams that he's being made Lord Mayor of London while he snoozes on Highgate Hill, and this is what he makes him return to London. And we know that Richard Whittington did become Mayor of London, as Rob said, several times. So there's scope there for a really good dream sequence towards the end of Act One. There is, as you say, the shipwreck, and Rob's already mentioned all sorts of staging possibilities for that, be it a UV scene, an underwater scene. We did a version a good few years ago with the previous company where we flew Tommy the Cat and Dick Whittington, and we had a whole underwater scene behind them, so it looked as if they were swimming after the shipwreck. And we then had a whole 3D sequence where we'd created a character turtle, and the turtle was trying to escape from sharks and things, so the audience all donned 3D glasses and had all these sea creatures coming out at them over the audience, which caused squeals of delight or horror perhaps from the older members of the audience. But it's got all sorts of possibilities. You then find yourself, as Rob says, there are various versions of doing it, but potentially in Morocco. So you've got a whole change of scene, the chance to really change up the look of the show for a brief period, the whole feel of the show. So it's something that's totally different, lots of different opportunities. And you've got this, one of the most important central characters, certainly from the point of dealing with the jeopardy within the narrative, is Tommy the Cat. So yeah, all sorts of exciting stuff.
Well, let's talk about Tommy the Cat, Rob, because I mean, historically, over time, this panto has often been called Dick Whittington and his cat. Of course, there are skin characters, you know, pantomime horses, cows, and others in other pantos, but Tommy is central to this, so much though that he often features in the title of the show.
Yes, and so much scope in terms of how you might portray that role as well. So I've seen talking cats. It's a great opportunity for dancers as well to become that part. It's great for those that specialise with skin roles as well. Such a narrative heart. And like with the cow in Jack and the Beanstalk, you can really get a feel of that family relationship. It doesn't matter whether it's a human being or an immortal or a cat, that you've got that partnership, Dick Whittington and his cat. And again, there's that expectation. Even when you have the title just Dick Whittington, I think that is one of the expectations. Is there going to be the cat in this piece? And again, Dick Whittington gives lots of scope for casting opportunities. You know, we've played around with King Rat, Queen Rat as well. That's been done for over a century. It's not new that we've had the Queen Rat scope. Again, how we portray the cat, lots of scope for casting possibilities there. I've seen fairy Bow Bells done in many different ways, male, female, whether you do a principal boy, principal role, as it were, for Dick with female identifying actor in that role. So there are so many scopes there, but that relationship between the cat and Dick is absolutely central, and you get that right. And that's why there should be that absolute cheer for me as a director when Tommy defeats the rats at any stage, particularly at the end. you get that cheer, because then because often what happens at that point is that we now completely trust you. You and your cat are part of our community, and both of them are outsiders who are then welcomed into that community.
Yeah, and Rob, the staples are there as well, aren't they? Obviously, the Dame is central. There is space for slosh scenes or set pieces. Historically, Imagine did a wonderful set piece scene with King Rat and his sidekick blowing up the alderman's safe with the squeaky floorboard, which was just hilarious. It still makes me laugh even thinking about it now. There's plenty of room for all that as well, isn't there?
Yeah, loads of room for the slapstick and the comedy. And yeah, I did the version. I think we did the same version in different venues, Martin.
Yeah.
Where the bow of the ship opens and then we're into a pie making routine. But that joy of the squeaky floorboard routine, going back to vaudeville, those vaudevillian routines there, silent comedy-esque for a couple of minutes, punctuated by the music in the pit. And the kids love all that because it's Jeopardy. It's the kids that creep down the stairs at night. I did it as a kid. I want to creep down the stairs and early in the morning. I don't want to wake the parents up. I want to go and put the television on. And that scene in itself was fed into that. And I saw the kids leaning forward because they were enjoying the fact, because they've been there themselves, of the rats trying to sneak in at night and tiptoe around a squeaky floorboard to try and get the money from the safe and trick Dick Whittington when he's asleep. So we kind of love King Rat or Queen Rat, whoever, in that moment doing that routine. But at the same time, we're willing for our hero not to be caught out. So it's really joyous. And often the rat is so flawed, often like Abenaza, as Eric was saying, you know, the Abenaza character, a complete megalomaniac. You've got real opportunities there with the baddie. So you have got the threat, but there's lots of comedic opportunities with that threat in Dick Whittington.
Yeah, another set piece that I've done Dick, I think, three times, and the set piece that I did on one of those occasions, Eric, was the scrubbing the deck routine with the mops, which is also comedy gold, isn't it?
Oh, it really is. The drill routine is great on board the deck of the alderman ship. As Rob said, these old routines that have their basis in music hall in vaudeville, and they still stand the test of time. You can really stop the show with these routines, and it's absolutely great. I remember Dick Whittington was the first production I worked on for Imagine up at the Palace Theatre in Kilmarnock in 2017. I wrote and directed it, and it was just a joy bringing it to life, and then seeing the first few shows before I left the cast to it. The audience just lapped up these old routines, including, as you say, the drill routine with the mops being thrown around. It's great to see. And that's why I believe panto can always evolve. It can always be contemporary. But at the same time, you mustn't mess about with it too much, because people buy the tickets, bring their children, bring their grandchildren, for the children to have the same experience as they had 25, 40 years earlier. They want traditional panto.
You're absolutely right. And I think that, you know, the drill routine is unique to Dick Whittington. It may be used, I guess, in other, maybe Robinson Crusoe, I don't know, but you won't find it in any other Cinderella or any of the others, Aladdin, for instance, which makes a nice change from, you know, a baking or a pie making scene, doesn't it? Which is nice. But in Dick Whittington, there are obviously different demands that are made of any producer and director, aren't they? Eric, script, music, casting, all those sorts of things. What is the change here? What are the differences between Dick Whittington in terms of its demands and other pantos?
Yeah, really good question. Obviously, you've got, as you say, different sort of whole feel to the show, because it is more nautical, and you know there perhaps is a crossover with the ever more rarely done Sinbad the Sailor or even Peter Pan, but it's a whole different approach musically. It's probably one of the very few shows you can get the In the Navy song in. And there are so many different things from the traditional other pantomime titles, Aladdin and Cinders, which are very much fairy tale based, whereas this is a real adventure. So obviously a whole set of costumes that are very specific to this show, you know, again, sailor feel, nautical feel. You couldn't sort of say, oh, we'll use the prince's costume here from last year. It wouldn't sit anywhere. So there's a whole new requirement for the wardrobe department. Set wise, as we've mentioned before, it is very specific. It really is. Unless you're doing something slightly clever with it geographically, it's very much London based. So again, again, it's not your archetypal edge of the forest cloth. It is, you know, either in Whitechapel or Highgate Hill or any of those specific London locations that you want to try and replicate. So it kind of stands on its own. And I think it's a jolly good thing that it does.
We mentioned the ship, didn't we? You know, that can be a rather nice set piece, rather like maybe the flying carpet or the giant and other pantos. The ship that Imagine has used and still uses is very much three-dimensional. You can go on the top deck, the front of the ship opens up so you can get inside, and that is a real wow factor piece, isn't it?
Yeah, that is a wow factor, and particularly when your head is near the top of the Cross Arch and you know, in a number one house, you're thinking, gosh, this has got some impact as well, and storage becomes an issue. But absolutely, you can really have those impactful moments. There are some quite spectacular kind of bleed throughs in the dream sequence. I've seen lots of variations of that. So you've got opportunities there as Dick imagines his future and dreams about being Lord Mayor. I've seen some really lovely opportunities there. So yeah, you do. And as Eric was saying, there are those unique elements, so things can't swap about in that way in terms of scenic design and costumes. And things like, as we've been discussing in terms of the drill routine, I have used that in other titles, but its natural home is Dick Whittington, because you can really get the characterizations through and the relationships through that routine. Again, so many opportunities.
In terms of pyrotechnics and lighting and so on as well, Rob, I mean, you've already mentioned, I mean, we talked about, you know, blowing up the safe, for instance. Obviously, you've got fairy bow bells or fairy bow legs, as King Rat or Queen Rat would often call her. There's lots of opportunity for that, and UV and other things, isn't there?
So again, if you're a lighting designer or a scenic artist, and now with the use of AV and digital, again, opportunities, particularly because of the travel, the quests that these characters go on. Sometimes you might start the piece not in London, so you see that travel. So you might start it in Stoke and head somewhere else, for example. So again, that's exciting. Where are they going to go? So as we mentioned, Morocco, Cloudland, was it Cambridge that I think went to Benidorm or recently? Again, you can have that absolute joy of going to these different locations as well, via the bottom of the sea often.
I find it very hard to believe that anybody would ever want to leave Stoke though, Rob.
I haven't. They don't let me out. I'm still here.
We talk in terms of the popularity of the title. It's lasted an awful long time. I guess that has an impact on marketing and box office, but it bucks the trend in many ways because, as we said from the very beginning, it's incredibly popular and it hasn't been covered by Disney.
Exactly. And we go back to the old box office discussion about the Disney titles, the Cinderellas, the Snow Whites. We've got a Little Mermaid this year, which, to be honest, is being done because of the relaunch of the Disney live action film. But Dick Whittington, as we say, hasn't as yet been Disney-fied, and it still sells well. We have the chart of the best-selling titles, and it will always be Cinderella at the top. Peter Pan always comes close to the top as well. But of the titles that aren't available on video, showing my age there with the video, Dick Whittington really does well. And I think that's probably because it's an established pantomime title. As we say, the people that are actually buying the tickets going back a few years, they know what Dick Whittington is. They know it's a good story. And they know, as we've mentioned, that actually there's plenty of opportunities in it for a good laugh, some great songs, some spectacular looking effects and scenery. So I think people who are buying the tickets think, actually, yes, I do know that one. I may not be able to show it to the kids in advance on the DVD player or whatever, but you know what, we're still going to have a good time. So thankfully, for the box office and the producers, it still really sells well.
For children and younger member of the audiences, Rob, do you think that they enjoy that more in a way because they don't know the story. They're introduced to something completely different.
Yeah, that is true because there's assumptions of it. Parents or guardians may have told them elements of the story on their way. But I've always found that they're really hooked in because they don't necessarily know that story, or it's a number of years since that venue has done that story before. So it's out of, a whole new generation of people come to see it. And I always remember the producer, Paul Elliott, talking around casting names as some of those titles, and this idea that if you don't cast a name as Dick Whittington, a named artiste or a named star, then you're literally on that journey. There's no assumptions of who that person is. They're not someone from music or telly taking that role. It literally is Dick Whittington's journey that he's going on.
Rob, what about the future of the title then? We've talked about the fact that, society is changing in values and views. And, for that reason, maybe Dick Whittington, it's not appropriate for him to go to Morocco anymore, as an example. Is it going to carry on evolving?
It will evolve, and it'll continue in the stable of titles, as we've been discussing, in relation to where it's sat. Sometimes it's been really high up, like the second or third most popular title sometimes. And last year it was there. It was kind of along with Peter Pan and Robin Hood and those titles sitting underneath Cinderella and Aladdin and Jack. So yeah, and I think as with theatre, we're creatives and we respond to the times. So Morocco is phasing out, or if we do go to Morocco, it's how it's done. So there's no cultural appropriation. It doesn't mean to say you don't go to Morocco. It's how that's done and sensitively done. But also, again, whilst that was in some of the original stories, in the early modern period, actually we're not wedded to that. They have to go somewhere else. That's all. That's the bottom line. And I think, as we've discussed, them going to Benidorm or going to Cloudland or heading somewhere else completely is fine. There has to be some threat, and there has to be a defeat of rats that have potentially gone on that have gone on the ship, on the Alderman's ship, or spacecraft if they've gone into space. That's in Cloudland as well. So it will evolve, and I think as has been done over the last 5 years, producers, writers, and directors and designers are really thinking sensitively about that, and it will continue presented.
And finally, Eric, of course, every Dick Whittington is different. I'm not sure how many you've written for Imagine this year, but they have local references. And obviously, each venue will want something slightly different. That helps with that evolution, doesn't it?
Very much so. Exactly. It can be different. And we've discussed about the fact it is very much London-based. The bottom line is it can be London-based. That's where the original story happened. But as we've done in the past, we've mentioned already, I've written it for two other locations, one in Scotland, one, Stoke as well. And the actual story itself holds it, and it gives it that sense of local ownership. And as Rob said, with the journey, which is such a big part of the adventure, which I love within this particular narrative, they can go anywhere. So Benidorm or whatever, even if they end up on the Isle of Wight, they've made that voyage and they've ended up somewhere different. And again, Tommy is given the opportunity to defeat the rats, deal with the jeopardy within the narrative. So it will keep developing, it will grow, but at the heart of it, there will always still be that art of great storytelling.
And it's still your favourite, Eric?
Oh yes, I absolutely love it. I played Sarah the Cook, I think, for 7 years on the trot at various venues around the country. I followed the production that I'd written, and I always ended up directing it. But I was so lucky over those years to work with, we had Fairy Bow Bells, was gorgeous Barbara Windsor on one occasion in Bristol. And then a couple of years later, as if that, we thought that could never be topped, we had Dame Edna Everidge, who played the Fairy Bow Bells character, but was unassumingly named Edna, Saviour of London. So there's so many possibilities. The version that Imagine do is such a strong presentation with all the elements that we have discussed, the comedy, the visual impact of the ship and everything. And it's going to be my favourite, I think. It's going to take something very special to knock off the top there.
And instead of throwing sweets out, presumably Dame Edna threw gladioli.
Exactly that, having flown in from the back of the upper circle on a wombat. I kid you not.
Wow. And Rob, you'd like to do Dick Whittington more because, as you said before, I think you've only done it three times, haven't you?
I'd love to explore more. What I've been thinking is we've spent half an hour here and there's been very little innuendo.
We've fought it very hard, haven't we, really?
You're right. Almost 30 minutes of this podcast and still no sign of... Anyway, thank you so much, Eric and Rob. Thank you for talking to us.
Real pleasure. Always a joy, Martin.
Thanks, Martin.
And that's it for now. As I said at the very beginning of the episode, there are many more fabulous guests still to come. Please subscribe through your favourite podcast app and make sure you join me, Martin Ballard, next time for episode 61, when we'll take you along to meet cast and creatives at one of many photo shoots for the next season of Imagine Pantos.
Thank you for listening to the latest edition of Just Imagine, the podcast series from Imagine Theatre.
That's all coming up in episode 61, so I'll see you then.
And you can find out more by going to www.imaginetheatre.co.uk.